The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horribly named, terribly named podcast series, but that's not the important part. The important part is the QA, which obviously is a question and answer. We like to make this an interactive conversation. It's also why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. All last week we had news, maybe some news broke over the weekend. We've got some time to just kind of sort out our feelings on it, come back, start the week fresh, and then dig a little bit deeper as we follow up on all these tech chat stories. I'm seeing a terrific crew to join me on that mission. I'm seeing J-Man. J-Man's asking how I'm doing. I'm doing pretty good. I mean, the real answer is where my podcasts are often quite rambly, I'm on 3 days of just varying and waffling insomnia. So I'm going to probably be pretty foggy today, which could be amazing. This could be like the best podcast ever, or you might just get like extended time of me staring off 1,000 yards with a cup of coffee, which I'm going to drink some right now. I mean, there's no in between. It's either going to be amazing or it's going to be a little rough. But yeah, I'm seeing Sam, I'm seeing J-Man, seeing Dave Burns, saying hey, I'm seeing Ron Guido, Farhan, Gormlord, Utaku. Did I say Simon Says Hypno? I'm pretty sure I said Simon Says Hypno. Yeah, I think we've got a pretty good crew. Snorkel, Foggy is okay. It's a Monday. Yeah, Simon Says Hypno, some hashtag some P super guy. Oh, I could definitely go for like a legit New England style split pea soup. Little chunks of bacon in there, get some black pepper going on. I need to see if I can do a good like smash pea soup. I have not had one of those in way too long. Pakistan saying what's up, and JMX Warrior saying hey everybody, I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I really did have a lovely weekend, but whenever I get through these like phases and I go through a fit of insomnia, like I just can't shake it. It takes like going to a point of utter exhaustion, failure, and then that seems to reset my sleep cycle and then everything's fine. At some point I need to talk to a doctor. It's probably not great. But in the meantime, you get loopy, Juan. Who is still making tons and tons and tons of videos. So that's pretty great. But we've got some fun hardware. Checking out the show this week, Sammy, my duo buddy. Sam is watching on his Duo 2 without Android 13. Someone got it loaded and it's fail. Imagine that. I'm not surprised. Android doesn't know what to do with dual panels in the kind of hardware configuration that Microsoft is using on the Duo. It's going to take a ton of custom code to make Android figure that out. And then there's another dual display viewer right now, as we should all shout out Farhan, watching his first stream from his LG Wing. The LG Wing, where is my LG Wing is right over here. So it's just, you know, a lovely little bit of hardware. You can kind of T-pose on those other smartphones and assert your dominance. Just a really, really, really fun collection of multi-screening and hardware experiments. It's really good times. And JMan150 just got back yesterday from a great holiday for 6 days and then came home to a very bad leak in the house. Oh no, JMan, that's terrible. I mean, my ability to not get adequate sleep, not great. Coming home to a leak in the house would be way worse. Actually, my wife and I were trying to figure out, like, how can we get good water sensors? Every time we sort of nail down what it is that we think we want for, like, home security and home observation, something else pops up, and you're like, oh, okay, well, we'll get to it. And then we're like, oh, no, but what happens? We got to fix it. So not great, man. I'm sorry to hear that. And, yeah, Sammy and Sammy's got a Wing, too. Watched videos on YouTube last night. Always a blast. And McCorkran, I have a Wing also. You got to love a community where at least 3 out of the first 16 people here have an LG Wing. It's because the people who watch my podcast and listen to my streams and check in with my videos have far superior taste to the average consumer who just buys $1,000 phones to watch TikTok, apparently. We're going to jump in. This is a very varied kind of news block. We have a lot of interesting little stories to kind of dig into, some things that we need to keep eyes on as just these stories unfold. And then when we get into the gadget block, I don't know about y'all, but I've been enjoying the ability to kind of shake up the gadget block a little bit, definitely turned it into some more Q&A. I've been running a little bit more performance testing on the two phones I have that have Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1s. So some fun things that we can kind of piece around, we can kind of play with. So we'll run, we'll see how the show kind of carries us through there. Oh, J-Man, the house has a fishy smell to it. Oh, that's pretty gross. You're going to want to definitely speak with professionals about getting that cleaned out. So we do have a little housekeeping, so let's knock out. Last week was really busy, but it wasn't a heavy video production week. I have been way overdue in updating my book. The book is Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs. The last update was at the beginning of 2020, just as we were kind of getting into the pandemic, so that was terrible. No, wait, hold on. I'm going to look that up, because that might not be right. I think I'm lying to y'all right now, which, that's not good of any host, right? Hold on, I've got a tweet, I can easily go. Okay, so it was almost exactly, so I started updating at the beginning of the pandemic. It was almost 2 years ago that I actually published all of those updates. Okay, that actually sounds a bit right. I was off, but I wasn't off by a whole bunch. Let me get back over here. So I have been writing new sections on sensor technologies, on bigger sensor phones, If you've read my book from 2 years ago, some of the passages that I've got are already sort of falling out of date with what the modern smartphone camera experience looks like. And if there are a couple passages that are from sort of more the original publication of the book, I mean, I started writing this book in 2014. And it's funny where I'm writing out like a section on, oh, sure, I mean, Nokia once experimented with an absolutely monster 2/3-inch sensor, but who will step up to make bigger camera sensors today? And it reads like a real bad tech editorial from 10 years before, and then you look back on it, you're like, well, that prediction was totally incorrect. So, you know, a 2/3-inch camera sensor is now pretty common on $300 phones. That's a 1 over 1.5. You know, it's actually not that extreme. So I've been going through and I've been re-piecing all of these passages and kind of updating where appropriate. Also, I've been trying to spruce up some of the images. So I've got like sample images, like this is what a phone mount holder looks like. And so instead of just leaving it like the old slingshot that I used to have with that, if you remember Gadget Lab 2, Gadget Lab 2 had the dark redwood table and the wrinkled gray curtains. And so there are a few photos that still exist in the book from Gadget Lab 2 in this new update for the book. A few of those photos are still going to stick around. Like I've got like camera viewfinder samples of old Lumias. I'm not going to reshoot, you know, or re-screen grab camera apps for Lumias. I kind of like that looks older. It's got my little white origami mech as the subject of the viewfinder. But a lot of those other sample photos I've been updating. So instead of just a terrible wood table shot with the phone in a mount, I'm also bringing out like phone cradles, like phone cages, you know, more professional and more production grade gear. Just to kind of like spruce up what's going on. Whole new passage on sensor technology, whole new passage on calculating crop so that you can understand the crop factor, excuse me, for some of these mega camera sensor phones. And I'm hoping to have that done in the next month. I spent a lot of time on that over the last week. So, Sam, we are the top shelf techies. Yes, you are. You are. Any group that sort of understands the pros and cons of duos and wings, that's better than the average bear, kind of techie there. Videos out on the channel, I did get this. This is a review of the Poco M4 5G. And again, I kind of have to reiterate, I feel like maybe there are too many Pocos. I don't want to say like that's a bad problem. Like, I think it's a good problem to have when you have so many good daily driver, affordable, inexpensive phones. The M4 is a great phone, but there's an M4, an M4 Pro, an M4 Pro 5G, and now an M4 5G. And I've had three of the four M4s that I'm aware of. At least I think there have been four. I can't even tell anymore. Again, I don't want to memorize this stuff. Poco puts out so many phones, I should not keep all of them in my brain. But it is getting kind of difficult to sort of compartmentalize. Even if you were only looking at Pocos, what phone would you recommend to someone? I'm not sure how that should go, right? So I put out a video on the Poco M4 5G, which is not the Poco M4 Pro, and I think it's a great little phone. It's a little difficult to quantify. I think this is the right phone for this consumer. But actually using the phone, it's a solid little phone. Also, there was another. I'm trying to put together this series on disaster tech prep. The first one went swimmingly. I worked with a company, Giant Power Station. That was great. I had other companies lined up to do things like portable refrigerators, communications equipment, walkie-talkies and radios, solar panels. And then all of those have like None of them have completely fallen apart, but they're in varying stages of communication with the companies to sponsor them so that we can really do them a little nicer, so that it's not just, let me tell you about this thing and I will hold it up in my office and that is a thing. I'd like to sort of put more of the resources towards sprucing up a few of the topic videos. Not always my reviews. Actually, my reviews I need to simplify. But for editorials and topics like these, I'd like to make them look a little nicer. In the meantime, I got another power station. I've got two massive battery boxes in the house right now. So LiPower sent over the new Mars 1000 Pro. And it's a hefty box. It's a 30-pound box full of battery cells. 1100 watt hour capacity, 1200 watt output, a surge at 2000 watts. It's a beast of a, hey, you got to power every appliance in your home. I mean, because it could. I mean, if you do the math, if you've got a decently power efficient full-size refrigerator, this thing could probably run it for an hour or two on a full charge. So it's pretty crazy. This is a tech category. Like, if I were to just completely shift my channel now and just get into, like, lifestyle tech, it's this type of portable generator, power station, solar panel type of kit that I've just personally been super, super into. So the LiPower and the Poco were the main videos that I got out last night. Gormlord writes, I need a chapter on cat photography. That's pretty much all I take pictures of. Well, I could be wrong here, but I feel if you're already taking tons of cat photos, probably don't need me to write a chapter just about taking photos of cats. So, yeah. That's all I'm saying. Farhan, I also got a Lumia 1020. Not gonna lie, the photo quality of it is still amazingly great for its age, even in full res. The Lumia phones were so far ahead of the curve. Again, I mean, you can pick up a 1520, a 930, I mean, even the 950. I didn't like the 950 processing. I really felt like Microsoft kind of went overboard. The Lumias, the Nokia Lumias, were always a little hyper-vibrant, but I feel like the HDR smashing of highlights and lowlights and the super warm, ultra-saturated look of the 950 never really appealed to me. But the camera technology was easily generations ahead. I mean, those things were shooting 4K video with directional recording audio capabilities, manual controls. Like, the Lumias were a step ahead. And they were doing computational photography very well long before comparable Android phones could stack basic HDR images. And the 1020 is still fun to trot out from time to time just to say, like, hey, this was an impressive camera for its time, had a mechanical shutter. That stuff was great. Great. Gormlord, you're wrong. I do need the chapter on cat photography. Okay. Maybe I can include some sort of chapter on challenging photography stuff for cats. hold on, I gotta... Just realized I forgot to take my daily allergy pill. So I also might be kind of scratchy and snotty today. This is going to be a great podcast. I'm already feeling this. One last little bit of just back pattery. I got to throw this one out there because it was just sort of a nice little moment to have last week. And of course, Instagram never formats well for this type of a stream. The at Google Pixel Instagram account was picking some highlights from Pixel photographers to celebrate for World Photography Day a couple days ago. And some really stunning images, like that's a great model shot against a really vibrant background. And then there's this incredible little macro shot of a snail. And that little snail shot came courtesy of me. They picked me to include in their little roundup of World Photography Day images to celebrate the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. So I was just feeling really good about that. There was astrophotography, there was location photography, they had a model, they had some light painting effects, and then one little close-up on a snail after a bit of rain. I was like, hey, that was sweet. So again, I just wanted to kind of throw it out there. It was like, hey, they like me. They really like me. So yeah, it was pretty cool. So I'm going to say let's cap there for housekeeping because I ran crazy long. Dave Burns was right to point this out. If you listen to the end of last week's show, about 20 minutes before we wrapped the podcast, I made an estimate that I was going to end the podcast in about 2 minutes. And then I went for like another 18 minutes of talking and I kind of blew my voice out. So I figure wrapping up housekeeping, 9:18 in the a.m., that's probably pretty good. Aw, Trey, Juan's kind of a big deal. I don't know about all that. But again, considering I've written a book on smartphone photography, it's nice from time to time getting to show some of the stuff that I'm good at. So much of my phone photography these days is more family and lifestyle. And again, Lex really isn't old enough for me to feel comfortable sharing tons of photos of her. And it got I loosened up a little in an era of wearing masks. Like, I still think she's got a shot where we were kind of posing her as Hermione. She's wearing her Harry Potter cloaks, and she's got a wand, and she's got her Gryffindor tie. And she's got so much attitude. We curled up her hair so it's all frizzy and stuff. Like, stuff like that. I love sharing stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not sharing all of the slice of life stuff that I take where I feel like one of my greatest strengths as a photographer is candid photography. Like, I'm pretty good at finding those moments. I'm really bad at staging a nice portrait. And so it feels like the stuff I can really only share comfortably these days are my flower and bug macro photos and close-ups and stuff. So again, it was kind of like, again, as an example, because it's a macro shot, and people are like, oh, yeah, you got up close. And you're like, no, but you see the texture and how I'm angled in the dirt, and I'm almost at the eye level of the snail. I mean, I was laying in wet sand to get that shot. It had just rained. So, yeah. It felt nice. It felt nice getting just the little nod from the Google Pixel team saying, like, yeah, it was a pretty good shot. Oh, man. So I mean, a couple folks in here saying, like, what Microsoft could have done and how we maybe could have saved. You know, Coppa Cash bringing up HP buying out Palm and almost immediately killing them. It's so sad. So sad. McCorkran, I also like taking photos of insects. I got a bunch of ants devouring a centipede on my Pixel earlier this week. That's intense. Asking a question, what's the light pollution like in your region? Do you ever play with astrophotography? So my neighborhood gets dark, like on the ground. We don't have a lot of street lamps. If you go just sort of around like the sort of condo units that we're in right now, it gets super dark. But we're close to the high school, which almost always has floodlights on. And then we're just over the hill from a major highway. So there are lots of city lights on the opposite side of this hill. So I can't directly see them, but as soon as I set up a phone to try and do astrophotography, it's totally blown out. There's way too much light that accumulates for a longer exposure to try and do something like that. Well, I have not found a good location to shoot night sky where it doesn't come out looking like daylight in a lot of these sort of auto post-processing HDR modes. So I really got to scout someplace. I'm sure, like, if I go driving to maybe some of the horse trails, I'd be further away from the main city lights, from the high school lights, and then I could maybe find something a bit better. I'm really not great at astrophotography. I've been trying to shoot good night sky since the G3, the LG G3. And I've never really found the hook for it. Like, this is what makes for an interesting image, or this is how you kind of spruce it up or edit it, or, you know, this is how you get a great silhouette of the ground, but then the sky looks like universes are you know, visible again. I really haven't gotten good at stuff like that. Excuse me. DTNL, laying in the wet sand with your phone out? That's me after a night out.
Ha ha ha! Because Aditya likes to party. From Trey Wan's theme song for updating his book, Elvis Costello, Every Day I Write the Book. It has taken me so long. Because it's like I'm going through chapter by chapter and just kind of tweaking a little here, updating some language there. It's not one like, oh, I just need to include this section. This is the big camera sensor section. It's like putting in information there also relates to another chapter where I say, you know, like, man, sure would be nice if more companies made 2/3-inch sensors. Well, now they're super common. So that whole thread, those all of those ideas that are kind of peppered throughout, where I'm talking about the different capabilities of different phones, they all need to be adjusted. And I don't want to have to completely rewrite sections, so I'm adjusting, but then thinking, oh, but in this other chapter, I also talk about how this influences your ability to gather light, or this is what tweaks your shutter speed. And so it's like I've got to sit there and like very, very strategically scalpel all of those different pieces. It's tough. It's taking me way longer than, I mean, at some point I might just need to do like a top to bottom rewrite, which I don't want to do, but I also don't want it to be where I finish a chapter and then there's like a subtext updated for 2022. Everything that you just read was incorrect. You know, like I don't want to do that. That seems really hack. Why don't we knock out some news here? We can chew through the news block, try and move through this pretty quickly. I'd really like to finish this efficiently. Everything that we're going to be talking about today, the housekeeping, all of the news stories, the links, everything's going to be available on somegadgetguy.com. This week's podcast post, all the show notes are going to be up on the interwebs. You can, and I would highly recommend, we've got a couple stories here, a couple links that I really do hope you'll click on those links and you'll read through them. But I want to start off with something near and dear to my own heart. I am an audio nerd. I know I just spent all this time talking about rewriting a photography book, but my first love and passion has always been audio, acoustic sciences, and hearing loss has become sort of one of my champion causes. Not that I'm for hearing loss, I am anti-hearing loss. But if you're suffering from hearing loss, some very good news. This is coming by way of Engadget, written up by John Fingus. FDA greenlights over-the-counter hearing aids. So you might not need an exam or a prescription. From the article, OTC hearing aid sales should soon become a practical reality in the U.S. The Food and Drug Administration has issued a final rule allowing the sales of hearing aids for mild to moderate impairment without requirements for exams, prescriptions, or audiologist fittings. The measure is expected to take effect in mid-October when you should see aids reach physical retail stores. That is fantastic news. I've been a big fan of some of these new hearable products that are sort of part-time earbud voice amplifiers. Not quite hearing aids, but you use like the technology of a normal pair of earbuds, and instead of the noise reduction just blocking noise around you so you can hear your music better, they try to block noise around you but then elevate things like human speech. That type of tech is still very new. I think it works very well in minor to low-grade moderate hearing loss, but moving up into proper hearing aid technology, something that looks more discreet, that fits behind the ear better, has better capabilities and smart accessibility functions to pair with phones and computers, that's the next stage. And especially when we can kind of open up some of this. I mean, the concern is people buying hearing aids that don't fit them correctly or don't tune them correctly. Again, the main piece of advice is you should always work with an audiologist to sort of prepare this type of technology properly. But there are so many people that sort of get left out of this type of assistance tech. You know, maybe they can't afford to see an audiologist. Maybe it's just difficult for them to find a specialist in their area. And at some point, you just want to say, like, hey, this person literally can't hear anything. we've got to do something, because that kind of progressive hearing loss is really bad for your brain. Links up very consistently with degenerative brain issues. So this is a very positive one. This is great, especially so, like, say you can't get in to see a specialist who's going to fit you and do all of the custom work for a proper hearing aid, but you do have a GP, a general sort of a what is the word for that? The doctor what you see just to do normal checkup stuff can at least give you the basics of a hearing test to say, yeah, I think you'd benefit from a hearing aid. You can go buy one. CVS has one, or Costco. Just go pick one up. And we can try and work with seeing how to get it set up. So, positive step in the right direction. I just, like, you can go to any drugstore or any warehouse store and get basic magnification glasses. Like, say you don't really need a prescription for your glasses. You just need a little bit of magnification when you're reading. This type of stuff for your ears, I think, is a very positive direction to take. So, great little piece of news. That really made me happy last week when that story broke. Oh, and Barry Johnson's in the chat. He says, hey, Juan and Chatters. Everyone say, hey, Barry. Barry's been cutting out some really great work. And Barry, I do have a phone packed for you. I will try to drop it off in the mail today. So, Aditya, you know, this is correct. I'm genuinely curious, won't a doctor checking out your ears and prescribing hearing aids actually be better than a symptomatic treatment using hearing aids without a doctor's intervention? Yeah. Yes. That's accurate. But what happens if you can't work with an audiologist to do that? I guess nothing. That's what's happening for a lot of people right now. They just get nothing. So again, if we're talking about reducing harm, then, you know, having access to something like a hearing aid is better than none, even if it's not as appropriately configured and tuned and applied as the proper way of doing this. But like I said, you don't need to see an optometrist to get reading glasses. So I don't think you should only be able to buy hearing assistance products, and good medical grade ones, not just like those terrible infomercial microphone things, those amplifiers. Those are terrible for you. That's the alternative, is basically just putting a microphone around your chest and sticking like a terrible headphone in your ear and having it just blast sound all around you. That's sort of the backup for a lot of people. Yeah, no, seriously, man. All of these people that live in a country with an actual healthcare system probably get confused by some of the challenges Americans face. Oh, and they should. Yeah, let's not normalize for the rest of the world what we deal with here.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Yeah, MamaCon, that's all I'm saying, is obviously it would be better to work with an optometrist or an ophthalmologist to really fix vision issues, but there's also a window where a basic magnification correction is all that person needs, and spending all of the time and money and effort to see a proper optometrist doesn't make sense. And I think the people who are going to benefit from over-the-counter hearing aids are kind of in that category. Some people are not going to get treatment like they should. That's a bummer. But those people currently can't get treatment like they should. So really, it's progress towards normalizing this conversation and making all of these products more accessible. And hopefully, and I hate to sound like a capitalist here, but also hopefully driving down some of the prices on nicer hearing aids. Because decent hearing aids are stupid expensive. We're talking like $5,000 per ear for the top of the line, really good sort of custom sound tuning kit that people have. Shifting gears significantly from med tech to entertainment tech, HBO Max not having the best week. And again, I think it's kind of interesting where we're seeing sort of the shock and gasp of some really aggressive policy happening with HBO and Discovery. And yet, I'm not seeing the same kinds of headlines that like, oh, Netflix is dying. Isn't Netflix over? Aren't we done with Netflix? Have you killed Netflix? Because I've killed Netflix. But HBO is like, yeah, so they're just gutting all their shows and they're canceling a whole ton of movies. I mean, that's probably bad. We don't know. From Variety, again, I have to say, Variety hasn't done as much editorializing in their headlines for Netflix, but I think it's kind of interesting. We've got another pair of stories coming up, too, where the tone of the writing does not seem consistent when we look at different streaming platforms. This is written up by Wilson Chapman. HBO Max to remove 36 titles, including 20 originals from streaming. So simple and to the point. There you go. That's all you needed to know. That's not good or bad. It's just the thing that's happening. And that's really kind of how news should be. HBO Max will remove 36 titles from its service as early as this week, Variety has confirmed. A spokesperson for HBO Max attributed the decision to the pending merge of the platform with Discovery Plus, which is also owned by Warner Brothers Discovery. So the originals, I don't know that I've seen any of the originals that are leaving. 12 Days of Christmas, About Last Night. Oh, Aquaman, King of Atlantis. That's going to be leaving HBO Max. Close enough. Ellen's Next Great Designer is just getting axed, and I'm fine with that. The Fungies, Generation Hustle. Generation, Infinity Train, Little Ellen, My Mom, Your Dad, Odo. Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness, Summer Camp Island, The Not Too Late Show with Elmo. My daughter has not started watching that, so we're not going to start her off on that. And then we've got a couple HBO originals, and then collections from Cartoon Network. Again, I don't know any of these titles. And some recently acquired titles, Detention Adventure, Messi Goes to Okito, Mia's Magic Playground, The Ollie and Moon Show, Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures, Make It Big, Make It Small, and Squish. So, yeah, a big culling. Number of projects that are in active development are getting cut. A number of films, like Batgirl, just got shelved. Now there's even some rumors, some murmuring happening that The Flash might get shelved, too. So there is some significant play here from the HBO side to meet up with the expectations of Discovery for cutting costs, showing losses. Like, they want the tax write-offs, something fierce. And then I don't know what this service looks like after all the dust settles. Like, I really don't get where this goes. And so where it's disappointing, you know, we can look at a Netflix and say like, oh, they raised their prices and they canceled, you know, Santa Clarita Diet after 3 seasons, or Glow never got the conclusion that it deserved. And you're like, yeah, that all sucks. But the culling, we've never seen Netflix just slash and burn. It's like HBO is treating their catalog like industrialists treat the rainforest, and it's bad. It's real bad. okay, so this is Variety. You know, Variety.com, where you would expect the tone of the commentary to be very Hollywood and sort of performative leftist, right? Not actual, like, liberal leftist, but, like, lots of chest puffery and we care about people and we want to make money on all peoples of color. And the first comment is, good riddance, go woke, go broke. It's just a glowing, the amazing discourse that we find in the comments section on old school blogs and editorials. Just hilarious. Yeah, Twin Folk, HBO Max was really the best new streaming service, in my opinion, but Discovery is absolutely going to ruin it with stupid-ass Chip and Joanna and dumb-ass 90 Day Fiancé. They are going to learn a tough lesson that the balance of content matters and that the Halo products, the things that you spend lots and lots of money on, contribute to the mindshare of the platform. And this is one of the reasons why I feel like there are so many sort of down, doom and gloom editorials about Netflix. It's not that Netflix is really in bad shape. It's the perception of Netflix looks shakier when they're not throwing tons of money around. Now that they're not filling all of these other production houses' pockets, now people are complaining about Netflix strategies and prices, and that works its way from like sort of the media outlet down to people that just share headlines and don't really read articles. But it's concerning. Like my wife and I, we just finished the additional two-parter, the extra bonus episodes of Sandman, and we really like that show. I really wish, especially with someone like Neil Gaiman, who is so much savvier at his social media, I really wish that that had been packaged and presented as a limited series. Like, make it more of like a British-style television property. We're going to do 10 episodes. That's the story we're going to tell. If this gets enough traffic, if this really excites enough people, it gets shared and people are subscribing to Netflix and it's generating more buzz and revenue, then we can look at a series too. But instead, they tried to format it more like an American TV show where there's every expectation of getting a season two. But you've got Neil Gaiman on Twitter saying, yeah, we don't think there's going to be enough interest in this to do a season two. It doesn't matter that it's like the most streamed show on television. What matters is that Netflix is making money directly off of these kinds of in-house projects. And if you want to do Sandman right, season two has to be even bigger in exploring all of these ideas than season one. And season one had to have been a ridiculously expensive show to produce. So you're going to Netflix saying, hey, we want to do this and this and this with these types of realms and worlds and all this extra kind of like CG work. That's going to be even more expensive. And Netflix is going to go, well, for season one, you pulled these kinds of numbers. We don't think we can do a season two. That's what's going to happen. So, yeah, the perception is what's really critical here. And because these types of properties don't seem to generate the sort of long-term viewership, like, I love the show, but I kind of don't want to go back and rewatch Glow because I know it doesn't have a proper ending. So Netflix has kind of shot themselves in the foot there. That's nothing like taking tons of shows and originals and movies and just gutting them. just wrecking them. So it's tough. It's really tough. I don't know what HBO is going to look like by the time we get out of this. I'm going to take a quick sip of coffee and hold on one second. Oh, McCorkran. I think we can safely say that Werner is not going to pay for season 5 of Westworld at this point. I'm a whole season behind on Westworld. I heard some murmurings of season 4 ending in a somewhat anticlimactic way. So, oh, Twin Folk. And yeah, Disney Plus is raising prices too. Raising prices, and they're also going to be creating an ad-supported tier. Now remember, that was the worstest ever for Netflix, and now everyone's just going to shrug it off. So they're playing, Disney especially, is playing this really brilliant game of media management. Because you also know, like, people who write editorials on these types of blogs are not going to attack Disney. They're not going to bite the hand that owns every media outlet out there. So it's kind of like Samsung and Apple in smartphone reviews. You don't want to get blacklisted from Disney, so, you know, you just report on it. We're just giving you the facts. There's going to be an ad-supported tier. It's probably going to be fine. But when Netflix does something, oh my gosh, it's the worst thing. Can you imagine ads on Netflix? Isn't that the worstest? I know it's a cheaper tier. You'll spend less money. But isn't that terrible? Oh, Disney's going to do it? It's probably going to be fine. Far on. I was about to say Samsung and Apple. Yeah, exactly. And Papa Cash, I feel like the completion of the story in 5 seasons is exactly the plan that they should have stuck with. I finished Better Call Saul, and that show rocked my socks. And when you see a showrunner go out with a plan and have the clout, like Vince Gilligan has had the cachet to do anything he wanted after Breaking Bad. And he set forth and he said, hey, this is the structure. And season 3 is probably gonna kind of drag a little bit as I go through the ebb and flow of 5 seasons of television. Perfect. Perfect. Great, great conclusion. Great contribution to the Breaking Bad world. You can now kind of play with time. Like, you could sort of start off Better Call Saul, watch Breaking Bad, go back to the end of Jimmy's saga at the end of Better Call Saul, wrap it all up with El Camino. I mean, it's just a beautiful arc of like drug dealing and misery and crime. And it's brilliant. But you have to have someone so hot in their career that they can dictate to the studio, you are going to give me 5 seasons or you will be in massive breach of a contract and it will be painful for you financially and in the media for you to step out of this contract. That's the kind of leverage you need to be able to achieve something like this. And Westworld is one of those properties, especially after finishing the first 2 seasons. I really wish the show had more of a concrete feel for what the arc of the story was going to be, as opposed to it being, what's the arc of the season? Westworld is so high concept, I don't feel, and again, like I said, I'm a whole season behind, so maybe season 4 is about to rock my world, but I don't feel that they've got the same kind of consideration towards what they're arriving at to conclude the entire story. So we'll see. from Twin Folk, if HBO is banking their future on House of the Dragon, they are going to be sorely mistaken. And Simon says, Hypno, banking the future on just one show is always a mistake. It's pretty bad. But I feel what Discovery is going to say is, why are you spending all this money on high concept fantasy when you could just take all of that money and make 20 reality garbage shows? And you make money on that. I mean, it's not like we don't have a few regularly streamed, like, home and renovation shows in our house that I can't stand. So, moving on. Let's change gears. I was just talking about sort of the media perception of how we talk about news, right? There are certain brands you're not allowed to really attack or criticize, right? If it's a Google thing, go nuts. Every Google product is the Google fail, is the worst ever. The Pixel can't even do things, 60 hertz and thumbprints and all that jazz. Apple's a little different, though. So I have a pair of stories here from 2 different media outlets kind of covering the same topic. And I think we should take a look at, you know, one outlet is known for a lot more investigative news, tech and politics. They do reviews on phones, but that's not like sort of the core image that you would expect. So let's start with them. This is a story from Ars Technica, written up by Andrew Cunningham. Right in the headline, new Mac OS 12.5.1 and iOS 15.6.1 updates patch, quote, actively exploited vulnerabilities. Kernel and WebKit bugs can allow arbitrary code execution on Apple's devices. Now, in the chat, if you saw that headline, how would you feel about the security of Apple products? Right? So, and especially the second line, you know, what do you call that? You've got the headline, and then it's not the byline. The byline is the author. But kernel and WebKit bugs can allow arbitrary code execution on Apple's devices from an actively exploited vulnerability. So, is that like a... But I need to see some comments. How are we feeling about that? How do we feel about that kind of a headline? Because you're going to see that in your Twitter feed. What's your reaction? Oh, there are people talking about like pixel coverage on XDA. No, we're talking about Apple right now. This is the worst podcasting ever, but I'm waiting. I'm waiting until I get some sort of reply. Again, you guys are talking about pixel coverage. So Pakistan says, my reaction would be no poop. Am I trying to keep this PG? I don't even know if I'm trying to keep this PG. Aditya Anil, it's Apple, so it will always work. Twin folks, sorry, Juan. It's fine. You don't have to apologize. But I mean, like, you just saw that headline. You just saw that headline. You just read the second line. There is an active exploit that can allow for arbitrary code execution, remote code execution. Subheading. Thank you, Simon says Hypno. But what do we think? You know, that is very specific. Do you have a MacBook? Do you have a Mac Studio? Do you have an iPhone? I would be nervous about my security if I had an Apple product. I think this is the correct response, McCorkran. If I had the Apple product and I read that headline. So in this article, let's jump into the article here real quick. Update as of August 18th, Apple has released the Safari 15.6.1 update for macOS and Catalina to patch the WebKit vulnerability it fixed in macOS Monterey yesterday. Still no word on whether the kernel vulnerability is present in either of these older operating systems, but we'll update if Apple responds to our query. So Apple isn't even disclosing which machines have been affected, whether or not the kernel vulnerability is present on older builds and older operating system updates, and you don't know. This is a potentially active exploit that can cause harm to your system, run code, give kernel privileges. And Apple is not being forthcoming about whether or not it's affecting older machines. But it did release, you know, sort of a... Oh, and iPadOS, excuse me. It also, they did release for iPadOS too. Kernel vulnerability that can allow apps to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. A WebKit bug that allows for arbitrary code execution via maliciously crafted web content. So those of you asking, yes, remote access and kernel privileges. That's pretty bad, right? But this is breaking it all down. Ars Technica is telling you, at least as far as they know, the current operating system updates that are patching this, and the sort of the bug labels, so you kind of know what it is that you're looking for, and they're giving you all of this information, but it's only like a 4-paragraph story. Big problems, please update. And Apple software notes for the updates don't reference any other fixes or features. Apple is actively developing iOS 16, iPadOS 16, and macOS Ventura, and those updates are due out later this fall. So this is a very concise breakdown. It tells you there are some very serious vulnerabilities, and hopefully with these patches that they should be corrected, but we don't still know how far back people might be affected. So I feel like that's a pretty responsible way to report on the core mechanics of what's going on. We've told you what the operating system update numbers should look like. We've told you what products those operating system patches are out for. And we've at least kind of put in a paragraph that this is a pretty serious exploit. Data. You've got better data. So now let's shift gears and let's look at another story that kind of talks about the same thing. So I'm going to go back into screen share here. And so now remember, the first article you went through and you saw in your headline, specific operating system numbers and products, and a sub-headline that was, this is a pretty bad vulnerability, a pretty bad exploit. This one's written up by The Verge and one Mr. Mitchell Clark. I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. The 0 days start coming and they don't stop coming. So let's say you saw that headline in your social media feed. I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. The 0 days start coming and they don't stop coming. How would you feel about your Apple products if you saw that headline? Does anyone have... I mean, again, I'm going to drink some more coffee and we'll see what people have to say. Farhan, well, that's rather ironic, isn't it? Kappa Cash, I'd be like, what? Twin Folk, but one, I thought iPhones couldn't be hacked and Macs couldn't get viruses. Dave Burns, so relatable. The Verge is so hip. Simon says, no, I'd wonder why I was reading such a poorly written poop. Dave Burns, am I doing the memes? So, okay. Mommy Khan, no clue what he's referring to, right? You have no information. You don't know what products are being affected. You don't know what the vulnerability might resemble. What the heck does 0 days start coming and they don't stop coming? That doesn't mean anything. But let's look at maybe the article's better. Maybe in the article, they've got some better information to share. Well, this article is three times longer than the Ars Technica article. All right. Starting it off, well, here we are again. I'm writing an article to tell you that you should really update your iPhone, iPad, or Mac as soon as possible because the latest software for them fixes some pretty nasty bugs. The security notes for iOS, iPadOS, and macOS describe fixes for bugs in the OS kernel, parenthetical, basically the core that controls everything, and WebKit that could allow hackers to run malicious code on your device. The notes also warn that the bugs may have actively been exploited. Okay, so at least the first paragraph gives us some scope. Not nearly as dangerous sounding as the Ars Technica article, but then from there, we've got multiple paragraphs just going on to say, well, maybe it's bad, but maybe it's not so bad. But it could be bad, but maybe it's not. This is unfortunately something like the third or fourth time I'm writing a post explicitly asking people to update their iPhones or Macs to patch some pretty serious security flaws. And the truth is, I could have written this exact post even more times than that. There have been 13 updates to iOS 15, and 9 of them have fixed some sort of arbitrary code execution bug. Oftentimes, some of those bugs would allow attackers to obtain kernel privileges. Constant security updates aren't necessarily a bad thing. Sure, they could be an indication that a lot of bugs are slipping into software, but they could just as easily mean that a company has gotten really good at finding existing issues and stamping them out. The reason I'm pointing out Apple's recent track record isn't to shame them, but to remind everyone that updates these days are pretty important and they should be installed ASAP. Words fail me. I just, from all of the times I've read through named Microsoft and Google, Android and Chrome OS, like security threats in headlines on articles, I just think it's kind of interesting that they're just lumping in. We've only told you about 4 massive code exploits. We could have written this article 9 times just on iOS 15. But you know what? lots of updates like these, that's not a sign that anything's wrong.
No.
Apple's gotten really good at stamping out exploits that they can't even tell people if the exploits are affecting their machines. Apple won't tell older Mac owners if this is a kernel problem on their machines, but they're real good at fixing problems after people have been affected. And so where I would normally say, oh, well, let's look at what the algorithmic interest is or the search interest on something like this. To me, I feel I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices is a string that probably isn't very search friendly, at least from what little I've learned about search engine optimization. This feels like we kind of need to say something about a major problem with this manufacturer, but what if we set it in a way that's going to attract as little attention as possible? And that way, we also have the plausible deniability of saying, well, we write articles about Apple problems, just like we write articles about Microsoft and Google problems. But they also missed 5 other instances of major kernel executable and WebKit exploits. They could have written about it, but I mean, it would have just been the same thing. Just make sure you're updating your, that's the only advice we can give. Just update. Don't find problems with any Apple products. Just make sure you're updating the stuff and it's fine. It just works. Simon says, Evernote. Yeah. 12.5.1, the Mac OS update, is a 3.09 gigabyte patch. No features are mentioned. They actually do talk about this in here. It's 3 gigabytes of software patching for Mac OS with no new features or product improvements detailed specifically. It's just 3 gigs of, you know, whatever. It's fine. Oh, it doesn't mean that there's a problem. It just means Apple's really good at putting out massive OTAs. Yeah, cup of cash. Apple cares so much about your privacy and security to even tell you about the exploits. So again, I just feel like that's worth joking. Let's just to recap. We've got 2 stories here. One from Ars Technica, new Mac OS 12.5.1 and iOS 15.6.1 updates patch actively exploited vulnerabilities. Kernel and WebKit bugs can allow arbitrary code execution on Apple devices. And I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. The 0 days start coming and they don't stop coming. So I don't like calling out individual reviewers and blogs and organizations. Ever since the Xperia 5 response that I wrote to a larger YouTuber, it's just sort of a sick confrontation. It doesn't help. It increases visible traffic when you call out, oh, by the way, this was kind of hack. But when you see trends and you're like, well, wait a minute, I've got a whole list of comments on my Pixel videos talking about how Google products have so many bugs, how OnePlus devices are never good enough, how Motorola just can't get their updates right, how come I only get like one major OTA on Motorola every couple of months when Samsung's putting out tons of OTAs? And then you see something like, I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. And you're like, I wonder why there's this continued perception of some companies doing this better and other companies just can't seem to do anything right. I feel there's now a cynically obvious manipulation in play. This is a bad trend across the entire tech commentary landscape. It's not unique to one website. This is endemic to how we talk about consumer electronics. And it just rolls into the profitability of the companies involved being able to manipulate the articles and the videos that talk about all of these different products. Because I guarantee you, a kernel level remote execution vulnerability in Windows would be a bigger named deal on many of these types of blogs and write-ups. So that's what I kind of feel we need to keep pushing back against. Yes, please let your family and friends who use Apple products know that there is a massive vulnerability out there, and it's probably being exploited, and they need to do their due diligence to, you know, sort of patch and update and fix their devices so that they don't fall prey to bad software. Also, maybe highlight, this is a problem across computers, and Apple is not special in being able to protect their users. In fact, they're often not that great at protecting users, especially if those users are on older devices. If they're on older devices, we've got another article where Apple just seems to hate the environment, and Apple's track record of like putting out updates, great. Their ability to really kind of aid people in using those devices longer or bringing new features to older hardware, not so good.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions, and of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos, but if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
Yeah, McCorcoran. Hold on, let's see if we can find it. This author has a very clear headline in an article about a Pixel bug with wireless charging, but the headline is just a generic. But this headline is just a generic warning. Hold on, let's see. So Mitchell Clark. Mitchell Clark wrote up the Pixel. Yeah. So, some Pixel owners can't wirelessly charge after Android 13 update, but I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. So what do we think is more serious? In the chat, let me know. An annoying gremlin and this is mostly affecting older Pixels, like Pixel 4 and Pixel 5 owners. A few Pixel 6 owners have said that they've had an issue. My Pixel 6 Pro still charges wirelessly. But it's a little gremlin that somewhere in the power management settings of the Pixel, it's not charging like it should on wireless pads. That's a bummer. That really is something we should call attention to and motivate Google to fix. But what do you think the severity of that issue is compared against remote code execution through kernel vulnerabilities on Macs, iPads, and iPhones to warrant two different styles of headlines? One headline: some Pixel owners can't wirelessly charge after Android 13 update, fear, uncertainty, doubt, or I am once again asking you to update your Apple devices. You know. Yeah, Aditi isn't even telling a joke. Now you know it's like we've run out of runway. Remote access exploit is clearly more malicious than the loss of wireless charging on a 2-year-old phone. And McCorkran, since 95% of the people don't actually read the article, they just read the headline, this lets Apple off the hook. Yep, it's not great. So we're still in the news block, and I want to wrap this up. I'm looking at what I should do. I've got this Threadripper. It runs well, but I've had a number of just little gremlins the entire time I've been running this box, and I like it. I like this computer, but I really do feel it's time to start looking at replacing it. And I've gone long enough that I don't think I'm just going to do like a couple little piecemeal parts or, you know, just a motherboard and a CPU. Like, I think I'm just going to start fresh, totally new build. And I'm actively kind of scouting, like, maybe I just want to buy a pre-built and have someone else handle, you know, the maintenance and get a warranty on it and do all that stuff. Or, you know, if I want to build my own, what am I waiting for? And I'm kind of curious to see what the next generation of NVIDIA cards is going to look like. And I'm very anxious to see what our next story is. AMD's new hardware announcing on August 29th, here's everything we know about the Ryzen 7000 CPUs. You know, the final phase of AMD's Ryzen 7000 CPU rollout is approaching nearly 9 months after initially teasing them at CES. This was written up by Andrew Cunningham over at Ars Technica. And we're seeing a die shrink, 6 nanometer. Oh, sorry. The chiplet cores are 5 nanometer, and the IO die, which also features their integrated graphics, is a 6 nanometer process. So we're not going to see, I don't believe we're going to see crazy differences in core construction or in the sort of the layout of the chip, but giving it a little bit of a die shrink from 7 to 5 and keeping the same core configurations should line up with some of their claims, because they're saying that we're supposed to get around a 10% bump, better power management, better performance. But this also sounds a lot like what we're doing in phones right now, where a yearly refresh, it's a new process. So that's, you know, new fabrication, it's a new node. That is expensive and it's kind of a big deal, but we're not radically changing the configuration. So Intel went with big little. On our phones, we have big powerful cores and little power efficiency cores. And Intel is doing something similar now, big little, asymmetrical. Multi-core computing. AMD isn't doing that. So they're going to be doing the same, 6, 8, 12, and 16-core chiplet CPUs. But I think they're hoping that they're going to see better power efficiency by shrinking, by making those cores smaller and more efficient. So we'll have to see. Their big claim is like, we've tweaked and refined the setup, and we should get even better single core performance. Something tells me Intel's still going to take that race. I think between the two companies, Intel's recent changes to big little. So when you get like a 12 core Intel CPU, it's not all the same cores. They're different sizes. So you get different sort of performance values for that. And Windows is finally starting to take advantage of asymmetrical core configurations. I think Intel's still going to take the single core win, but AMD, if they can kind of continue on this path and give us better power efficiency, is looking to, again, significantly improve on multi-core computing. So, Steve, the die shrinks start coming, and they don't stop coming. Well, now it would be the opposite. So now if this were a Verge article, it would be, you know, AMD talks about new chips, and the Apple version would be Apple's, you know, Apple Silicon and the new M1 processor is radically outpacing the competition. You know, that's how you would do the difference. So you'd have to like switch the energy, right? So now we would be purposely vague if this were a Verge article because it's AMD. And if it were an Apple SoC, then it would be very specific brand names, all the product parts, and explaining how it's better than anything else that's ever come before it. Ah. Sorry. I just noticed Michael's comment here. I almost need to get drunk after that section of the stream talking about our last topic there. But so I'm kind of, you know, sort of in a spot. I was seriously thinking, like, maybe I should try and jump on the current gen AMD. The prices on CPUs and GPUs have kind of leveled off a bit from where we were with some of the worst, distribution issues over the last 2 years. Putting together an entirely new box, and I mean, like, putting in a healthy amount of RAM, a nice Gen 4 PCI, Gen 4 M.2 solid state drive, going with like a maybe even a 3090 for the GPU, and it's a pricey box, but it's not outrageously expensive like it was a year ago. So I'm kind of stuck. Like, I might try to pull the trigger on something that's current, knowing that these parts coming out, are likely going to be a little bit inflated in prices compared to the performance of what we can currently put together today, especially as companies are trying to clear stock and clear inventory. We're starting to get the headlines on Intel 13 gen and the 12th gen parts that are out now are really solid performers. The power they suck is a little concerning sometimes, and I would be looking at like a 1200 watt power supply, but I'm kind of in that spot. Like, I think it might not make sense for me to wait for the 4000 series Nvidia cards. I'm torn because I don't feel like prices are gonna drop. So let's say an RTX 4070 performs similarly to a 4090. I think the 4070 is going to launch at a new MSRP that's pretty close to the 3090's reduced sale prices. So I don't know that I'm really going to get a deal if I hold off for the bleeding edge. But again, I kind of need to put it all together. And, you know, it is kind of interesting. Like, I don't have the contacts that I used to because I'm not working with Newegg anymore. So, I mean, this is going to be like, hey, Juan saves up for a whole new workstation PC. Isn't this going to be tough? But I was also kind of thinking, like, man, it kind of would be nice to also, like maybe I just want to get one of those cute little Corsairs. You've seen those, like, the Corsair tube computer? It looks like just an oversized thermos, but it's got, like, a 12900 Intel CPU. I think they actually do make a variant with the 5950 from AMD. And then it's got like an RTX 3080, and it could literally just like kind of sit on my desk as opposed to having this giant, massive sort of server style tower under my desk. I'm tempted. I'm like, I'm kind of, could I do that? Could I pull something like that off? And Dave Burns, yeah, I know you've been rocking the 3090. I'm not cutting 8K, and I don't see any near term future where I'm like, you know what I really need to do for my channel is start producing 8K video. And really, that's the main thing that has tied up my 2080, is lots of sort of correction or color correction or graphics templates. Like, DaVinci lags hard when I start doing like text and inserts and things. It's why I don't do a lot of, you know, like, draw a line to this part of the thing and then have it track and then also have text that floats the thing that I'm tracking. Not only does it have a hard time playing it in a preview, it also is way slower rendering that kind of a graphic. So that's really where I want to step up to something like a 3090. Just the extra RAM, being able to buffer that stuff, being able to just play it more smoothly in playback, that could be where I make that transition. I don't know, we'll have to see. But I also need to kind of reach out and just say, like, hey, I used to do a whole bunch of work with you at Newegg. Would you guys want to do something on my channel? And then see if maybe anyone would want to play. Yeah, Pakostin, please let those companies drown in their oversupply of GPUs. Pakostin has no chill. Well, yeah, man. I mean, it's not like I'm rewarding them, especially 3090. For real, are we considering rewarding NVIDIA for moving the high-end GPU into entirely new and higher tier? It should be far lower than a few hundred dollars to be worth rewarding that behavior. It's the reality of where we're at. I'm not buying a 3090 at double the MSRP because retail inflated the price. And we know NVIDIA played games with the perception of their pricing because they saw how inflated the after sale market had become. And that sucks. At some point, I need to be able to put together a computer that can do a better job of creating the videos that I want to make. And what do I use? I mean, again, J-Man saying, like, either that or get a Mac. I could get an M1 Pro. I don't want an M1 Pro. And especially for the kind of stuff that I also like to do in addition to editing video. Mac ain't for me. That's not my jam. So I'm going to be very closely watching the announcement coming next week. I wanted to talk about just that story from Ars Technica because next week is technically a pajama podcast, so I don't know if we'll be covering a lot of news and stuff. But it's also kind of exciting to me as we start seeing like what this next phase should look like. AMD and Intel are sparring pretty well in the Windows, Linux, PC space. And Apple has done something really exciting and disruptive with their Apple Silicon, which is a silly brand name for just their own line of SoCs and tablet-style processors. And we're just starting to see, I think, the transition in x86 land to better compete against ARM-based SoCs. And at the same time, you know, phones and tablets have never been more powerful than they are today. So again, I'm right at that transition. I'm doing okay with this old Threadripper box. Probably need to start picking a lane for what I want that replacement to look like. So we'll see. From McCorkerin, yeah, there's actually a chance to sort of play Moneyball here with used graphics cards because the supply is going to be overwhelming. I don't know that I want to go used because I'm going to be leaning on this really heavy for video editing and rendering. I don't know. I really don't think I can. Like, if this came from a farm of, like, crypto mining or something like that, I kind of don't want those miles on the card. And from Steve, from Q3 Becker, the Radeon 6950 XT is baller for the price, IMO. And I need to see, that's another one too. I am way less familiar with AMD's top of the line graphics cards. When I was at Newegg, we had, what was it? The 400 series cards. We were playing with those quite a bit. We never had our hands on like their Pro line or on, or at least I never did. I think we did do a write up on one of their like workstation grade cards while I was there. I mean, compared to the regular content that we were producing on NVIDIA Kit. So I don't know. I just don't know their graphics line as well. I would really, and again, it's really hard to get good information. Last night, I was just looking it up. Like, maybe I do just want to get a Mac Studio. And I'm looking up headlines like, I want to compare DaVinci Resolve on an M1 Ultra against some kind of PC configuration using a 3090. And if you put those kinds of terms into search, all you get is an endless stream of Apple headlines. Apple says the new M1 Ultra is better than a 3090. And then, like, a couple months after those articles came out, Apple misrepresented the performance of the M1 Ultra against the 3090. But you can't, none of those outlets actually test anything. It's just this regurgitation of the same, like, Apple marketing bar graphs. It's insane. It's maddening how little. One of the best showdowns, and I really wish they would follow up on this, was DP Review. DP Review did a comparison between, I think it was a MacBook with an M1 and some kind of Windows PC with like a 3080. And like, that's the closest I've seen to two people comparing two similarly priced products in the kind of workflow that I do. And it's very bare bones. It's actually not a great nuts and bolts. Let's really dig into all of the different performance metrics. It's just like, hey, we tried to render the same kinds of videos in DaVinci Resolve and in Final Cut and in Premiere. And this is what we found. And you're like, I need more data than that, but I need data like that. Not, can you show me the same Apple marketing bar graph again that tells me nothing? Maddening. it's so frustrating. Oh, McCorcoran. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think a lot of people are going to score some great deals. Michael says, but that's why I'm calling it Moneyball, taking advantage of a market inefficiency. Q3. No, it wasn't F-Stoppers. It was one of the videos on DP Review. The two guys, I can't remember their names, but the two hosts on DP Review actually did do a Mac versus PC showdown, but it was more, I think, during the... It might have been an M1 Pro. I can't remember now. But again, I need something that's a little bit more current, and then I also want to more directly compare a hardware configuration for the kind of PC I would build, not just... Excuse me, it has a 12th gen Intel. Look, I need something better than that. I need a Gamer's Nexus or a Hardware Unboxed kind of breakdown. Because there are a variety of different things that I do on this workstation, but I kind of need to balance out like a streaming build versus a gaming build versus a video editing build and kind of balance some of the things that would make one better than the other. And then come up with a budget that makes sense for all that. Yeah, Duelos, like, it's not great right now. I've had that same frustration when it comes to laptop GPU and CPU reviews. Very few outlets, I feel, are really doing the work and showing their work. And that's why I become such a big fan of, like, Gamer's Nexus. I think their whole, like, turn into investigative reporting is a little silly, but it's bringing them the traffic and it's making them the money that is also going to help them continue doing GPU reviews. So I know WTF is going on. All right. Just a quick shout out. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is the first week. This is one of the worst weeks the subreddit has ever had. This is the lowest traffic we've ever seen. And I didn't put out a ton of videos, so top three, I am not in the top three. But the podcast did make it into the top five. A, number one with a bullet, Tech by Jermaine. Best phones of 2022 so far. And his thumbnail is great. His thumbnail has a Xiaomi and a OnePlus and a Vivo and a OnePlus and a Motorola and a OnePlus. So it's a different kind of breakdown on phones out there and a bit more of an international focus. We're going to be talking about this video more specifically, but the number two spot went to Hugh Jeffries. If Apple really cared about the environment, they would stop doing this. And then an article, we might need to start capping these. People are sharing directly from like Google News. And it creates like a double click that you have to get through. But Google Pixel Buds Pro with 11 hours of battery, the full review. And that made it into our number three spot. Last week's podcast, number four. And Joshua Vergara, checking out the Pixel Buds Pro, made it to number five. So a handful of other videos talking about starter phones, my Poco review, more Pixel Buds Pro, ColorOS, TK Bay talking about ColorOS 13. So this was a pretty mixed up week on the subreddit, but like I said, lowest traffic the subreddit has gotten in over a year and a half, if I'm remembering sort of what our weekly sort of weekly engagement usually looks like. So I'm going to put out the plea, if you would like a resource to find other tech commentators and creators, it's only as good as how people participate. So if you like resources like these that help bring other voices to the table and help create a broader look at the tech industry and can do a better job of sharing content, then you actually have to go and click the up arrow occasionally. I know that's very difficult. You go to the site and you say, hey, I like that story and I like these people and I just want to click, 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 click. Whew. Boy, howdy, that was tough. But seriously, it's a labor of love, but it is labor. And when I can't sit there and do all the heavy lifting and promotion and talking about it all by myself, subreddit hasn't been doing so hot. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, make it the platform and the site that you would like to better support content creators you enjoy. So moving right along. Get that out of the way there. Okay. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. So we do have a little gadget block story here that I want to knock out real quick. This is from the Wall Street Journal. There we go. Snap scraps development on flying selfie pixie drone. Who could have thunk it? A really expensive $230 mini camera drone that flies for a couple minutes but can land and take off from your hand wouldn't necessarily take the world by storm. I know, it was a total shock to me, but apparently in the kind of media creation environment that we're in right now, it doesn't seem like drone selfies are the things that people are really interested in. So the Wall Street Journal did this whole cute little video commercial for the drone, by way of review, of course, but they have a full article here talking about how basically this is sort of done. Snap chief executive Evan Spiegel recently told staff during a regular question and answer session of the decision around the Pixie drone, the effort to halt further development of the project is part of broader reprioritization of company resources. And I feel like that is like the perfect summation of Snap's current strategy. I don't know that Snap has like a clear vision of what it is that they're trying to accomplish in a world of TikToks and Instagrams where they were sort of the hot hip kid for a while, and now the current tastes have sort of moved from where Snap was. And I don't even really know what Snap looks like right now. It wasn't a social media site that I ever really got into. So I feel like there have been a lot of struggles and challenges. If you want old dudes like me, I've been sharing to Flickr again. You can follow me on Flickr for much better high-resolution photos of what I'm taking from my phones right now. I've been very sort of strategic. I'm not uploading all the time. But my Flickr account has been so much more fun to sort of revive than trying to spend time on Instagram. And then I would give anything for classic old school MySpace to return and save us from this hellhole of Facebook style engagement and TikTok style manipulation. So Snap, not in great shape. So I hope they figure it out. Again, I don't want there to be fewer resources for people to interact. In fact, if anything, we need better compartmentalization. You go to a social media site to do this and not just have every social media site copy what brief trend is super, super popular for that moment. Again, like I'm so stoked with Flickr because they got bought out by SmugMug. And when I was really into selling stock photography, I had a storefront on SmugMug. I like their business model. It's very direct. It is for photographers. It's kind of like Vimeo versus YouTube. Vimeo is not a casual, just upload your wacky little vlogs. Vimeo is like, this is for filmmakers. That's who is here. And I like going to that site to see content that was produced with purpose. It's great. Awesome. Snap needs to find what their hook is again. And then kind of double down on that. It was never going to be a $230 drone. So that's not great. Yeah, Baseball Super Snap is Snapchat. That's correct. Their company is Snap. their site is Snapchat, and then they have a couple of hardware products like spectacles and this drone that they're not going to do. But yes, they are. Dave Burns, they actually posted a profit. And I think in part they're looking at cutting costs to help some of those profits amplify. But once you've cut those costs and once you've trimmed those divisions, you still need to have a product with focus after that. And that's where I'm worried about Snap is, you know, you've cut a whole bunch of divisions, but what have you replaced them with? Man, I am dry. Hold on one second. I'm going to take another drink of water. All right. So I did want to talk about this video. Like I said, this was the number two story, number two post, I should say, on glowing rectangles. Hold on, let me get this here. What? NYC Dark Star. Hold on. Since you mentioned it, Space Hay is the MySpace clone, pixel for pixel, code for code. I'm going to need to check that out. I am very curious in someone trying to recreate MySpace. Who wants to be in like my top friends list? Okay. I mentioned this during the subreddit roundup. Hugh Jeffries, if Apple really cared about the environment, which we know they don't, they would stop doing this. This is one of those videos. Again, if you were on glowing rectangles, it would have been served up. Even trying to go with some kind of interest baiting, because it's not clickbait. This is a legit massive issue with Apple's distribution, older device policy, repairability. I mean, it speaks to so many of the core issues that Hugh Jeffries has done such an amazing job of bringing attention to over the last couple of years. This video for a channel with almost 800,000 subscribers is sitting at 128,000 views. That's not great. That should be better, and it's a very serious issue. So what Hugh breaks down, and please, I mean, it's going to be linked in the show notes. You can, I want you to watch the video, sit through an ad, let the advertisement play, support this channel, because I can't think of many people who literally show their work like Hugh Jeffries does on the kinds of content that he produces. So the thumbnail is Bricked for Life. This is a conversation talking about Apple's current device activation strategy and how easy it is to get locked out of an iOS or iPadOS device. And then you just end up sitting on a stack of these pieces and parts and products that can't ever be used again in the future. And there is a security aspect to this. We want a good activation lock. Someone steals your phone, you want to be able to make sure they can't use it or sell it. You want it to kind of have that ownership. But what Hugh points out is while this does have one categorical protection against theft, it is regularly tripping and blocking people just because they've forgotten an old password, or they're not constantly using this Apple account, but they had their kid signed in on this iPad and they logged in too many times and now they can't get the email confirmation to change their password. And you think like, oh, well, theft is definitely the bigger problem, but we're talking about millions and millions of iPhones and iPads and sometimes Macs that just become complete e-waste. They're functional products, they're usable machines, they're usable phones, usable tablets, and Apple's current policy is one that seems to direct people more towards a kind of planned obsolescence. And literally, sucks that you forgot your password. I guess you just have to buy a whole new phone. I guess you have to buy a whole new tablet. There's no way for you to detach it from your iCloud or from your Apple account. So I guess you just have to get a new one. And it does seem to be built with purpose to fail a number of consumers, especially consumers holding on to older products, to encourage the adoption of new hardware. Hugh puts that so much more eloquently than I just did, but it's yet another example of this anti-environment, anti-right to repair, and consumerism stance that Apple has developed over the last couple of years. Artificial barriers meant to create pain points so that you have to keep buying increasingly expensive products that you didn't really need to replace. You didn't need the replacement. It's just, it was getting too painful to use the thing that you already had. So it kind of helps encourage an upgrade sooner than you should have needed to. This is like the password management version of the Apple battery situation. Well, Apple was throttling your batteries because they put in a battery that was too small. And after the phone got to be about a year old, the battery literally couldn't power the SoC properly, so they had to cut the power of the SoC. What else could Apple have done, right? They couldn't have built you a better product that really was built to last for longer periods of time. That would have made them less money. You see the conundrum. Apple needs to make line go up all the time. So if you've got older iPads and you have everything, you would be able to take it to an Apple store and just say, hey, like, I own this thing. You can see it was on my Apple account and I just can't get into this and this password is gone. And there's nothing they can do to help you. That perfectly functional tablet is just e-waste and it's locked forever. And there's no way to get inside of it, even though we know that that's probably not true. And there's no way to resurrect it or to flash it or to repurpose it. Well, there's just nothing they can do. You just got to buy a new one. And that to me is horrific. Again, the amount of rare earth elements and materials that go into all of these products, it is shocking and sad that we don't have just a little bit more consumer mindshare on some really, I mean, truly awful business practices that hurt everybody. I mean, just think about all of the old iPhones and iPads that are falling prey to this, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of affected. I mean, talking to different repair people who promote third-party repair, that's all stuff that could be going to schools. It's all stuff that could be going to charities, to churches, to organizations that just need some basic kind of communications hardware. And instead, it's going to all end up in landfills. It's going to get mulched, and really toxic processes are going to be used to try and extract some of the recyclable materials, and it all goes towards Apple's bottom line. Apple has created an environment like this simply to profit off of it, and it sucks because that also means, like, every other manufacturer is going to look at how Apple's making money, and they're going to say, well, why can't we do that? Samsung is regularly trying to copy every single bad decision that Apple has ever made because Apple seems to make more money that way. Yeah, I knew this was going to kind of pop up here. But Apple has longest software support, the writer of that security joke of an article, maybe. from McCorkran, Apple fans will probably defend their decision to raise prices in the middle of a recession as well and recycle the same chipset. Well, of course. I mean, Apple had to. If they had put in a better processor in the iPhone 14, it would have cost you more money. So if you don't want to spend more money, then Apple has to use their older processor. That's the only thing that works. It just works. Aditya, but Juan, Apple cares about the environment. They took away my charger and make the box smaller. Why should they be considerate of my very human flaw of occasionally forgetting information? Again, I love it because it's like, we can't criticize a $2 trillion corporation. It's a problem with the end users, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of end users who fall prey to this kind of issue. That's not an Apple issue. No, no, no. Apple makes the software what just works. So that's what you got to do to fix it. So anyway, all my rambling notwithstanding, go watch the Hugh Jeffries video. Give him some clicks and give it some shares. I am actively imploring you. There's a little share arrow on YouTube. Let me scroll down. So under the title, if Apple really cared about the environment, they would stop doing this. And then you can click there for share. And then you can send it to anything that you would want to send it to Facebook, to Twitter, to Reddit. Let's see, WhatsApp, you can Kakao Talk, VK, OK, Pinterest, Blogger, Tumblr, LinkedIn, Skyrock, Mix, Goo. I don't even know what Goo is, but I'm going to have to go and see if I need to set up an account on Goo. But give it a nudge. You know what this is kind of perfect for? Like, if you have a LinkedIn account that you never really do anything with, give it a share there. This is good business news for organizations that are looking at how they want to outfit their employees. Maybe they don't want to give expensive iOS products to employees who can't remember their passwords without writing them on sticky notes. So, you know, give the dude a hand, because this is incredible work from a very knowledgeable individual who is like getting around a sixth the traffic that it really should get. And I'm sure even he's not getting the full support of his 797,000 subscribers. So, wrapping up, as we're getting kind of to the end, Dr. Claw. Man, I wish I had a sponsor like Taco Bell. Boy, if I could roll in that kind of cash, that'd be sweet. From Trey and Aditya. 100% of the time it works, 70% of the 50% when you can unlock your phone. funny guys. So, I want to spend a little time just kind of wrapping up. I have been doing a lot of performance testing over years, and I've been trying to find ways to kind of more directly relate, this is the experience of trying to use this product to accomplish this task. And it's really kind of been interesting, because I've been digging in heavy on things like Tensor. I really don't feel tech reviewers did a very good job of describing what Tensor was good at and what Tensor wasn't very good at. And do I have it? Yeah, I have it over here. And so, you know, I've got my little Pixel 6a, $450 phone, full retail. I mean, it's already, isn't like Best Buy selling it like the unlocked, you don't have to sign up for new service, and it's already like $50 or $100 off or something like that. So I've been trying to just look, you know, we've got this crazy powerful piece of hardware. What can you do with it? Or what is it really good at doing? And two of the phones that I feel have been the most interesting to sort of compare and contrast have actually been Vivos, or technically iQOOs. I've been bringing this up quite a bit. This is the iQOO 9T. So this is the one that's running the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. And this is the iQOO 9 Pro, which is just running the regular 8 Gen 1. And the more I use the BBK branded phones, Vivos, iQOOs, OnePluses, the more it seems kind of clear we are playing with some performance buffers or some performance thresholds. The iQOOs especially, I sort of run up to some performance limits. And even though I know a similarly built Motorola can outperform them, I see like, It sort of floats at a certain tier, and it never really crosses that tier. But what's been most interesting is both of these phones typically perform cooler. So you get to the end of the task, and it took these phones a little bit longer to finish the task, but they're not screaming hot to the touch. My Motorola's could get pretty toasty. The Honor Magic 4 Pro could get pretty toasty. So I put it out there regularly where I'm looking for other things that we can test. I really haven't found a good mobile document or mobile spreadsheet test. Like, there are these like workstation grade, massive workbook Excel spreadsheets that you can run tests on to see like CPU compute power. I haven't found something that kind of directly translates into phone use. And again, I don't do a ton of stuff like that, so I don't really know what I'm looking for. Like, what would be beneficial? There are some tests that are really about, like, crunching numbers and finishing off formulas and doing math. There are some that it's just like, can you load this massive spreadsheet? So it's pulling information out of storage. Two different tests, right? Very different. And I don't know for a mobile test what would make more sense. So I've definitely been focused more on video creation, editing, rendering, podcasts, photos, things that I myself personally, that's what I'm leaning on a number of my my phones on really heavily. So for my video editing and rendering tests, I primarily use PowerDirector and KineMaster, but I've started running a little test using Google Photos. And I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with it, but I did try, can I create, and again, it's actually two tests. Can I create a very simple, straightforward video trim test, and then maybe a more of a social media, slap a filter on it and put an effect on it and do that kind of a test? So actually, let me see if I still have it up. It would help if my 9 Pro were charged. Let's see if my 9T is charged so I can show you. This is the best podcasting, right? Whoo! Okay, so my 9T is booting up. It does look like it's charged. This phone has actually been really fun to play with, and I know, like, here in the United States, I should maybe be trying to make more noise with OnePlus. I really have enjoyed my time with the OnePlus 10, and the OnePlus 10 Pro was used for almost all of my outdoor photography on the Soundcore, the Motion Boom Plus. So almost all of that video was shot in 4K 120, so that I could show you really dramatic, you know, I'm pouring water over this Bluetooth speaker. Almost all of that was on the OP. I really like that 4K 120. So, okay, I've got the iQOO is booted up here. And I just want to show, like, this is kind of what's tricky about creating this test. So I go into Google Photos, and let me go into my library, and we'll go into here. I still have one of the videos rendered, so I can delete that. So what I've done is I've created a 3-minute video of just, like, clips of, like, different photo and camera samples. But when we go to edit this, we get this timeline. It's going to take a second to load this timeline. It's going to take another second. I'm getting notifications and alerts that I probably shouldn't be showing on camera. Go ahead, Google Photos, take your time. Let me just cancel this and try again. You're really not gonna make this easy for me, are you, Google Photos? So this is part of the problem. Like, when we're trying to benchmark a piece of software, maybe it just doesn't even work. Okay, finally got it loaded. So when you edit a video on a social media app, your tools are usually super simple. I'm used to working in PowerDirector or in KineMaster, where I've got cutting and splicing, and I can go multi-track, and I can do different layers and effects, and I can put on text, and I can do transitions and all that stuff. Well, if I'm just cutting a video in Instagram, I don't get any of that. I get this really brutally simple timeline scrubbing, and I can trim the head and I can trim the tail. I just want a chunk out of the middle. I can't perfectly recreate this edit on every phone. So what I've done is I've created a video file that has just a really obnoxious black frame. So there it goes. There's, like, a little blue car. It's about to clear. Come on. I've got to, like, roll the pad of my finger ever so slightly, and then it's going to cut to black. Come on. You can do it. Ah! There it goes. So I have to, like, stop as soon as that black frame shows up to try and make sure I'm editing close to the same. But it's never going to be perfect. So if I want to time the completion of a simple cut and re-render in Google Photos, that's the kind of shenanigans that I need to create. And again, if you're catching this on the audio replay, you're not missing anything spectacular. I'm literally just holding the phone up by my head so it stays in focus so that I can just show you how simple this is as an editing mechanic. But I did want to like highlight this. The IQ has the 8 Plus Gen 1, excuse me, the 9T has the 8 Plus Gen 1, the 9 Pro, which is now charging. I can't hold it up as high because the USB cable isn't as long as it should be. This has the 8 Gen 1. When I run this test, I am taking a 3-minute file. It's rendered to a pretty high bit rate, 4K, 60 frames per second. And I've purposely built 3 minutes of video so I can cut it down to 2 minutes of video. And then I put on a vignette and I put on a filter. So the real filter, if you want to see what the real filter looks like. You know, just a very Instagram-y kind of highlight saturation boost. And then I throw a vignette just so you've got like fuzzy dark corners in the sides. And then I time how long it takes the phone to complete that test. So far, the fastest phone to trim up one piece of video is the Pixel 6a. Excuse me. I've tested this on the Surface Duo 2, so I had an 888. I've tested it on the Pixel 6 Pro, the Vivo X80 Pro, the IQ 9 Pro, the IQ 9T, and what else? I'm missing another phone in there. I don't remember. But regardless, so far, the absolute fastest phone in PowerDirector, in KineMaster, and in Google Photos, if you just want to trim up one piece of video, has been the Pixel 6a. It's absolutely astounding. But when we want to talk about those generational or refinement differences, I've got the 9T is almost twice as fast as the 9 Pro. And the 9T is able to accomplish like this video reformat, re-render, and feels pretty cool to the touch. The 9 Pro also feels pretty cool to the touch. So I feel whatever limiter that BBK is putting on their phones, if it's a OnePlus, if it's a Vivo, if it's an iQOO, if it's a Realme, definitely seems to be sort of thermally restricted. Not quite as severe as what Samsung was doing to lie about benchmarks, but still, the phone gets to a slightly elevated temperature, and it seems like that limit just gets locked into place, and then the phone just kind of coasts at a lower performance. That performance limit on the 9T is noticeably higher than it is on the 9 Pro. So a number of my other benchmarks, the two are pretty close, but rendering a 2-minute clip of video on the 9T takes a little more than 2 minutes. It's like 2:30, which isn't terrible. It's not great, but it's not bad. In Google Photos, the 9 Pro took over 4 minutes to complete the same task. So like, say you just shot a little bit of video and you want to cut it up a little and you just want to get rid of the head and tail and you end up with like a minute long video, it can take twice as long as the video takes to play on an 8 Gen 1. It is noticeably faster on an 8 Plus. And then it gets even faster still when you use a Google SoC on a less on a lower screen rate refresh rate on the Pixel 6a. Because the Pixel 6a does outperform the Pixel 6 Pro. So, sorry, that was really, really long and rambling. Where we are, so I'm holding up the IQ 9T 8 Plus Gen 1. It still performs like phones at the beginning of the year. It's still very much a Snapdragon. It's an 8 Gen 1. It's just a better refined, and I am starting to see we're realizing about that 10% difference in power draw, which works out to lower thermals, which means we get more consistent performance near the upper limits of the phone. It doesn't hold true for every test, but enough of the heavy lifting stuff, this seems to be a help. Compared against something like the Tensor, we shouldn't be too surprised that Google's focus is on manipulating image data their camera stack, their ISP, their HDR algorithms, their processing, their stability, high quality video. And when you feed that through a Google app like Google Photos, that has now realized a performance advantage over Qualcomm and MediaTek powered hardware. So again, that was really rambling, but it's so much that I've been trying to keep in my brain. Like, I'm testing this phone to do this. I think I'm going to add the Google Photos benchmark just to kind of see if we can track changes over time. Like, we should hope to see an improvement on Tensor 2. So whatever comes out on the Pixel 7, again, we should be able to see some kind of improvement coming to a Google app in terms of that kind of manipulation, in terms of that kind of performance. It's been kind of heady because I'm still not sure, like, what are people looking for on these really expensive premium phone purchases? Like, I'm really struggling with, because I know what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a phone that can potentially replace a standalone mirrorless camera and a laptop. I might have a little trip coming up here, and I have brilliant options for things that fit in my pocket so that I don't need to travel with thousands of dollars worth of camera gear and, you know, $2,000 worth of gaming laptop, and I can still achieve a pretty high tier of production. And I get the, you know, I definitely have the luxury of being able to put two phones in my pockets that can cover different aspects of my current production. But even if I just wanted to do one, like, if I were to recommend, if I were just going to chat with someone who said they wanted to buy a $1,000 phone, it is getting increasingly difficult to answer the question, why? Why are we selling these types of devices if we can't properly quantify what they do? Right? Like, you get no benefit if you're like, you know, you have a slightly nicer camera and you can stream social media on it. There's got to be something else, right? But, you know, from the reactions that I see, like, I can work really hard and I can do all this work and I can compare all these numbers, and then no one watches or shares that content or reads those blog posts. And I'm like, well, why am I doing it all? Oh, that's kind of tough. It's like people want to know that I've done the work, but they just don't care to look at any of the results, which is bizarre to me. Because I kind of feel like we've commoditized the phone to such a degree. Phones do phone basic things. And now it's like, it's really difficult to push someone out of.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Megapickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Megapickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Sorry, I'm behind on some of these comments here. Dr. Claw, based on an old SDG QA, went back and looked at the Huawei P9 reviews. Yeah, those were fun. The P9 hit hard on Pocket Now. That's like some of the best traffic I ever got on any of the stuff that I produced. McCorkran, I saw $499 for the Pixel 6 and $599 for the 6 Pro or $579. I'm actually looking it up right now. I guess it's possible one store had a device that was priced strangely or something. I mean, we talked about it. Ew, excuse me. That was gross. Because I think we also mentioned it on Best of Our Week on this Thursday. There was stock at Targets that shouldn't have been sent to specific brick and mortar retail. And instead of like the hassle of sending it back or using it for web orders, they just clearanced it. So there were some Pixel 6 Pros that were being sold for like $300 just to clear stock, which is pretty crazy. From Pakistan, could it be an OEM who purposefully isn't trying to reach thermal limits? Maybe they aren't big enough to dismiss returns or faulty products. Cough, cough, Samsung, cough, cough. I mean, again, Samsung deliberately affected the performance of your phone for years, lied about their performance modes and their options and their tunings. And again, it got boiled down to I guess they fixed it. The game optimization service is totally different now. You're like, yeah, except the S22 still runs like hot garbage. Literally, hot and garbage. And I love it. Like, I got another comment on YouTube. Someone was like, man, I had the Pixel 6 Pro and I had to return it because it was 90 degrees outside and the phone immediately started running warm. You're like, there's no 8 Gen 1 that is going to handle a 90-degree day any better. So I very much doubt the whole tone of that story. If you replaced a Pixel 6 Pro with an 8 Gen 1, it was just like so much, it was magically better. It was better not having the Tensor. Like, I've had them all. Yeah. We had a 98-degree day where I was shooting video on the Pixel 6 Pro, and it got crazy hot to the touch. Do you know what else has gotten crazy hot to the touch on a 98-degree day when I'm using the camera and the screen at max brightness? Every other phone. Every single one. My LG V60 is over here, which I still bring out. I still trot out on occasion. On a 90-plus degree day shooting 4K video, this thing gets scary hot. Because it's hot. Because the ambient temperature of the air around it can't help cool the internals on the phone. So I'm kind of like, the comparisons here are just completely out of whack. And CopaCash, yeah, the Tensor is a monster of an SoC. And anyone who's kind of written it off as like a high performance option is telling you they don't understand how any of this stuff works. This could be kind of interesting. Again, Pakistan, I don't have enough good data on this. Pakistan writes, all right, this ties a bit with those video editing tests on mobile. With AV1 hardware encoding, wouldn't an ARC GPU be a good fit as solely video editing purposes? Specific purpose, specific device. Again, that is a very good question. One of the things I'm not quite clear on is how every single video editing application divides up its work. If it's CPU bound, if it's GPU bound, how they're arriving. I mean, there are obvious differences between KineMaster and PowerDirector. KineMaster's rendering engine has always been faster than PowerDirector's. So we know that there are functional differences in how they apply work to different components in a compute environment. So again, it's like, right now, I'm doing this practical real-world testing because I can't properly describe how every app is using internal pieces of every phone. Really, I'm just trying to get to some kind of completion, and a completion that I can compare. I can complete a similar video project in DaVinci Resolve, and it's going to look very similar, almost down to the exact frame of a video project that I can create in PowerDirector or KineMaster. So I just want to show you what those time differences might look like. I'm not able to properly analyze every single piece and structure of how that task is accomplished. So I'm still kind of flying blind on some of this, but I want to have a real world conversation about what it looks like to get this work done. It would be kind of cool though, and especially when we see different video compression, like Dimensity is ahead of the curve. Those Dimensities are playing back video files that make my 2080 Ti choke. And like, here it is on like a $400 phone, and I'm watching this Blu-ray rip, And it's like, it is a smaller file size, but great quality. And I try to play that exact same file on my Threadripper with a 2080, and boy, it can't. I mean, that's nuts. That is crazy pants how different those environments can be when you have, like you're saying, specific parts for specific purposes, including that kind of support is absolutely incredible. Well, I mean, Dave Burns, that kind of nails it. Dave writes, I only care when your work confirms my bias. But, you know, I'm not getting traffic on that. from Pakistan, are the LG Velvet G7 V60 tests are the LG Velvet G7 V60 tests comparable with your current set of video editing checks? Yes and no. The difference isn't generational in hardware. It's actually generational in software. The biggest issue that we've got comparing old performance numbers against new performance numbers is scope storage. So Android 11 really brought the hammer down on apps having their own little bucket of storage. Tanks performance across the entire phone. It's really bad for organization. It is the most miserable move that Google has made in protecting your devices. But it made older phones run like hot garbage. And there were so many tests, like my photo editing test, where you'd batch a series of photos and you'd render them. You'd save them as new files. And even just loading the files to edit is an order of magnitude longer under scope storage. So you kind of compare and contrast, and you're like, okay, well, once we made Android 11 and then we hit Android 12, we saw this performance tank. Had nothing to do with the SoC, has nothing to do with the hardware, has nothing to do with the actual generations of phone. A Velvet is still just as performant as it was at launch. It's the software that really hurt a lot of those older devices, especially like the mid-ranger chips. But even like the V60, Snapdragon 865 is still ridiculous overkill compute power for most people's needs. That is a laptop grade SoC. It is capable of incredible work. When you plug it into a desktop mode, when you do heavy lifting on it, you want to edit audio, edit video. I mean, the V60 is still a tank of a phone. But it definitely took performance hits when we updated to Android 12. It definitely got slower doing the same tasks. Now, what's funny is LG's optimizations for PowerDirector kept it running better overall. So you can compare an LG V60 against a Galaxy S22 Ultra, and the V60 can still eke out rendering wins against Samsung's latest and greatest. In KineMaster, the Samsung just wipes the floor with the V60, just crushes it. It's like by like almost a 20% difference in rendering speeds. But then you compare in PowerDirector and you're like, yeah, it doesn't win by much, but the V60 can still beat the Note 22. J-Man, oh yeah, the Snapdragon. The Snapdragon model of the S22 runs like hot garbage. And it is. It is hot garbage. It is not a well-built phone. They did not put the proper consideration for the 8 Gen 1 thermals in there. And it's no consolation that the Exynos ran worse. The S22, the Snapdragon-powered S22, is still bad. So, yeah, I mean, like Michael Corcoran saying, although I guess even on the laptop market, there are a lot of people that don't really shop. They just buy the latest Mac no matter what. I think there are far fewer people that are looking at the longer term investment in a laptop and then just saying, I'll just buy it because it has this label on it. When we still see that like Lenovo and HP regularly top the list of laptops, and that, you know, there are specialty devices, there are work-grade machines, there are durable machines, student machines, Chromebooks, low-power Windows portables. There's this huge spread that I think consumers still generally feel there are reasons why you would pick different parts and pieces. Literally just screen size can help manage someone's expectations on what costs there should be, how portable it is, how they can travel with it, or is it just going to sit on a desk and be a desktop replacement? There are so many of those variables. Consumers have generationally been better prepared for laptop sales than they are for phones. Phones, people hear, oh, it does phone things. Well, what are phone things? I answer calls and check my email and get the text messages and the blue bubbles. Like, okay, but you could do that with a flip phone. Like, that's not heavy use. Oh, but I also watch a bunch of TikToks. Okay. You didn't need more than like a $200 phone to do all that. So we just never got the message across that your pocket computer could be capable of significantly higher workloads, has been capable of significantly higher workloads for years now. So it's pretty rough. Yeah, again, I mean, like, I'd love to just scrap it all and go with Linux. Pakostin says, the day you slap regular Linux distro and run FFmpeg set of tasks with hardware acceleration, you're going to be a happy panda. I'm sure I will be. But this is also where we could use more competition. Like, if we had Firefox OS or Kai OS in any kind of serious competitive stance, if we still had Windows or if we still had Palm, if we still had anyone else that could shake up what Android and iOS are doing, we'd be able to have some of those conversations a bit more directly. But I don't want to end this on a big old doom and gloom. I think I'm going to be putting out another written article. This iQOO has been such a fun little tangent. You know, it's a good premium but not expensive phone. It's kind of like upper mid-ranger, lower premium tier. And I've really enjoyed playing with 8 Gen 1 in this flavor and then 8 Plus Gen 1, and then also on the 12S Ultra, which is a ridiculously expensive camera-focused phone. You can see two very different flavors of what they're trying to accomplish. And that's fun. Again, it's not just the SoC. You miss so much if you're just like, but it doesn't have the bestest SoC for the lowest price. And you're like, there's a market for that, but flagship killers are only one potential option in this market, and we should be looking at every kind of flavor, every kind of solution, and trying to make sure people get the right fit for them. So I think I'm going to start. I've been writing so much for the book. This is the last thing I kind of want to wrap the video up on. And again, I'm already running long for the podcast anyway. I've been making this threat in so many different ways, but like this entire last month of video on my channel, I really need to start drawing traffic back to my website. It really doesn't make sense to keep beating my head against the YouTube wall, and I think I need to be a bit more strategic in how I produce videos for YouTube. Again, it's like the algorithm is out to hurt anything that doesn't get the bestest watch time, and then your channel underperforms when you do have a video that should be hitting harder. Like I was showing, you know, I did this huge video showdown between the Vivo X80 Pro and the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. Now, I'm not an international YouTuber, but only 25% of my audience comes from North America. You would think Vivo X80 Pro and Xiaomi 12S Ultra would be two of the more high-profile premium tier search phones. Like, you would think there'd be some interest in pitting these two against each other, but what ended up being kind of almost 2 weeks worth of work is only gotten like 10,000 views. I can't survive on a channel of 10,000 views for that much work. The only reason that video got made was because it went to the Patreon first. And increasingly, like, I just don't even think it was worth putting it out on my main channel. It's not really advertising for me. It's not bringing new people to the channel. It's not getting shared. It's not getting supported. The comments are kind of limited. I mean, there's a lot of positive comments like, hey, this was a great showdown. Cool. But that's not growth. So instead, it's going to be looking at other solutions and other opportunities. And really, like, especially for a lot of these, like, accessory and... like kind of comparison conversations, I think that needs to go back to being written. So I think that's going to be the main focus as we get into the end of the year. There's so much more stuff that I'd rather be talking about. There's so much more stuff that I'd want to be covering, but I can't make it all into videos. I literally can't make a video every day. So those need to be written pieces instead. So we'll have to see. Dave, just rip off The Verge and become a hack. Dirty. I love it. Oh, Aditya, I think I know what you're driving at. If you want more traffic to the website, there's a particular LG V60 long-term review thumbnail you can use as a banner for the website to ensure a certain crowd will come back. Oh, yeah, that back pocket shot really did get a lot of interest. I love playing that game when I'm trying to talk about consumer electronics. That's hilarious. So, folks, I'm going to wrap this up. Like I said, you ended up getting kind of foggy and gloomy one coming into the end of this because I am on no sleep. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in, for taking this wild ride, and for jumping in. The comments have been absolutely fantastic. Definitely some points to remember, despite hack journalistic trends on websites, go make sure that your family and friends are taken care of. Massive exploits. There was another round of app malware that made it onto Google Play. Google's already kind of cut those apps, so you know it's doubtful that too many people were really, really harmed. But every time we have an opportunity to kind of live up to like our tech support for family and friends, go make sure that your iPhone and iPad and Mac users in your circles are aware that stuff is wacky out there and that they need to be keeping up with their updates and their support. It's a kindness, and just because we don't like how this stuff is covered in tech media doesn't mean that we can't be good resources to help people out. So next week is going to be Pajama Podcast, super chill. It's going to be very, very low key. I'm going to be curious to see what's going on with AMD, although I don't think that announcement's going to be live by the time I stream. I'll have to see. Let's see. Tomorrow is Gadget Goddess. Wednesday is Eric Easy Computer Solutions. Thursday, TK and I are going to be streaming, but Ike Talks Tech also does a stream. Friday is LaShawn, so holla at your boy for a bunch of crazy madcap shenanigans. We've got TK Bay is streaming on Saturday. Sunday is going to be El Jefe Reviews. We've got a ton of stuff going out there. Dave Burns, Vampire Survivors. All right. Vampire Survivors just put out another major patch. They put out a new character who I've already unlocked and I've already leveled up, and I've already evolved her weapon set. I don't really love her evolved weapon. It messes up your screen too much when you're trying to walk around the map. It makes you invulnerable for a little bit, but I don't like... Again, once you get into the end game on Vampire Survivors, you are eliminating so many you're eliminating so many bad guys. It's almost impossible to see what's happening on the screen. So I'm getting to the point now where no matter what character I play, I've got a pretty good build where the last 5 minutes of the game, I can just sit there and let everything swarm at me and I don't have to do anything. And it's not quite as fun as you think it would be, but I do. I've currently unlocked every secret. We also have the codes and spells, so I've unlocked everything there. And we're at 130 unlocks, and I've unlocked them all. So Vampire Survivors is in good shape. I'm doing fine on Vampire Survivors. I don't know that I should do another hour-long Vampire Survivors stream. I could play through 4 rounds of Vampire Survivors for a pajama podcast. You know what? I like this. DTNL also, Jeff and Sam and Joe on Sundays. Thank you. I always forget. I'm so sorry, guys. But yeah, they've been streaming some fun stuff. Aditya saying, would it be possible for a media movie discussion for the pajama show? I like that idea. I can glow all over Prey again. I've maybe watched Prey three times since I caught it first. We have Sandman. What did I just watch that was really good? And we can follow up next week. I don't have to figure it out right now. So next week, Pajama Podcast, we have a request for more like media, TV, and movie streaming. So we'll catch that. Purposely Gaming is saying hello. Hello, Purposely Gaming. And folks, we're going to go ahead and put a pin in this one. I want you all to have an amazing week. I want you to... Sore Hunters. Hey guys, how many endorsements for the Steam Deck did I miss? I unfortunately didn't get through any. This week was actually Steam Deck free, and I'm actually trying to finish up a Steam Deck versus smartphone gaming comparison also. It's tricky. So, I want everybody to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I want you to take care of yourselves. I want you to take care of yourselves so you can keep taking care of other people around you and be that good tech neighbor the world so desperately needs right now. So, catch you all back. Stay safe. Be well. I love you all. I'll catch you next week. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.